Listening to Rock Talk with Summer, a podcast where I interview cool people in the music industry, mostly female, and we talk music stuff. Don't let the name fool you. We talk about a lot of different types of music, considering the rock genre has over 200 subgenres, everything from punk to alternative to country rock to krautrock to shoegaze and everything in between. No type of rock music is off limits. Coming up in a bit, I have a conversation with Davina of Davina and the Vagabonds. They are considered a jazz blues band, but yet have a fairly distinct sound that makes it a bit difficult to completely classify. Davina is the lead singer. She plays piano in the band. She's a strong lady with a powerful voice and a story you need to hear. We talk Prince, the New York Times showing up at her house, her heroin addiction, their crazy touring schedule, and their appearance on the BBC show later with Jules Holland, plus more. She has some good insight on her struggles as a female in the music industry and how tough she is, something that can inspire other females, whether a musician or not. On my mind right now is the tragedy in Las Vegas. I think what saddens me most is what music means to so many people. It's a safe haven. The fact that such a tragedy occurred at a music event makes it feel less so. I personally have relied on music to get me through some tough times. I know I'm not alone in this. Years ago, when I was going through a divorce, going to concerts was one of my only outlets. It was my release to handle a tough period. When the rest of the world seems to be closing in, music heals. I personally witnessed the connection people can feel through music, something that isn't expressed necessarily in words. I've seen people cry and hug, smile and kiss, and some of the deepest emotions have been released at a concert. Fortunately for us, when tragedy strikes, we move on, and you can't let it keep you from living. We humans are resilient things. There's not a whole lot else I can say about that. But now on to better things. Here's my conversation with the gorgeous Davina of Davina and the Vagabonds.
Check, check. Check, one, two, hey. Check, one, two.
Cool.
Check, check.
Ready to have a conversation. Or shall I say it's already started?
The elevator. We've already had the elevator documentary pitch.
It's a good place.
I love it.
I think so too.
Love it. So I have to tell you that I discovered you about, 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
And it may have been you. It may have been a rep. I don't know who it was. I think I reached out over Facebook because I was sourcing music for a horror film that's filming in the Midwest.
All right.
And there is, they want to have music that's in the Midwest too.
Sure.
And so somehow I found you online and that song River.
It's a sad song.
But it's very appropriate for this movie. It was just like, it's just a great song because it's got like this amazing horn section in it, and it's just very earthy, and it just felt like it fit in that movie to me. It's one of the first songs I think I found for the movie.
Yeah.
And so I reached out over Facebook, I think just like on your Facebook page.
Sure.
And
did I write back?
Whoever it was did.
Yeah.
You gave me like the music for it.
There you go. So. It was me then. Yeah, I do all my social media stuff. I still do it to this day. I do all my graphics and my posters and stuff like that. So I'm glad you like it though. I'm a sad song writer. I'm an all over kind of writer, but that was probably one of my first, I think, true songwriting ballads. It was really sad, you know? So,
but it's a super powerful song.
Well, thank you.
So yeah, it is still my favorite.
Thank you.
When I play
awesome.
Your stuff, that is the one I always go to. It's like, this is it.
Well, we are definitely not going to play it tonight. My band does not know it. I wish they did. I'm sorry.
And when I introduce people to you, that's the song so I play too.
Yeah. So, maybe I should start playing it again.
You should.
I just haven't had it in the repertoire, you know. So yeah, there's actually a really sad story that goes along with that, but I don't want to be Debbie Downer now, but... Start the interview
we'll get there.
Like that, yeah, yeah. But it was someone else I know whose favorite song it was too. So
okay,
yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
wow, yeah. We got to get to that.
Yeah, we will.
So then the whole Minnesota thing. You came from Florida,
Key West. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm originally from Pennsylvania, but I lived in Key West for a number of years, and I think I've been in Minnesota for 14 years now. I've been in the Twin Cities, so I guess I'm Minnesotan now. I'm not passive aggressive yet, but I think I'm definitely.
You're not Minnesota nice.
I'm not Minnesota nice. I don't think that'll ever happen. I'm not going to sandwich. Like, they have these things where they're like, you look really good today. You know, that last thing you did might need a little work. You look really good today. Like, it's this sandwich thing that people do. And I'm just like, I think that thing needs a little work. Like, I don't know how to sandwich anything yet. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard this, because we have the Iowa nice, you know, and I've heard that it's more annoying to people than endearing sometimes.
I think maybe to people who don't work that way, that people who just use their words and...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's using your words as well, but I'm a to-the-point type of person. Oh, I hate wasting my time, you know, but so.
So how'd you get to Minnesota? Why?
So I lived in Key West, originally from Pennsylvania, like I said. I bought a ticket to New Orleans, but ended up, I was young. I've been on my own since I was 15. I'm 39 now. And I didn't make it to New Orleans, and I ended up in Pittsburgh and then met someone who was driving down to the Keys. And so I drove down to the Keys with a group of people and then lived there for a little bit and then backpacked to California for a little bit and then moved back to the Keys and then fell in love. And I took a Greyhound. I mean, this has been written. This song has been written by so many people, but literally took a Greyhound bus from Key West, Florida to Minnesota in the middle of February. And then that's why I moved there. And I started the band with him. He was in a blues band that I'd met in Key West when he was down there. Yeah. And then we fell out of love, and now we hate each other. Hey, Michael, what's up?
Love it.
Now we don't hate each other, but, well, I don't know. Anyway, but yeah, so that's how I ended up in the Twin Cities. You know, I never even gave Minnesota a thought, I think. Ever until, you know, moving there with him.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty amazing city. You know, both of them are really full of a lot of cool industrial history, you know, just like here, you know, and just like a lot of places. But now it's really has a good music scene, really diverse.
That's not why you went, though.
I didn't know. No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I think the first 2 years I lived there, I worked at Applebee's, and then I started teaching piano and vocal, and then started the band, and then I haven't stopped. I've been pounding the pavement ever since, like literally 200 days a year, just for the past 13 years. I just didn't think about it. I just did it. So,
wow.
Yeah. Threw myself to the wolves. So to say.
Well, and so being involved in the Minnesota music scene, did you have any exposure to Prince?
Absolutely none. Other than everybody loving him so much that I felt like, you know, I knew a lot of people that played with him, heard a lot of stories about people playing with him, heard a lot of stories about him, but never met him. When he died, it was our CD release party. I'm not laughing because he passed away, but it's just ironic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but like, a night to have that.
But it was at his favorite jazz joint that we play. It's like it's called the Dakota Jazz Club, and that's where everybody would always see him, and he'd sit at this specific table, and that was the night of my CD release. People are interviewing me from France and from different countries, you know, asking me. And I'm probably the worst person to ask because I've never met him. You know, I don't know anything really about him. I have no stories whatsoever. I know some of the songs I'll sing along when they're on the radio. But there's like, I mean, die-hard Prince fans there. And it was a really sad and tragic, you know, way he had passed away, too. So that hit me a little bit due to the addiction and probably the privacy and the loneliness he had at the time. And had to been, it's just weird, you know. But yeah, New York Times, I have one of those Ring doorbells where you can visually see people who are coming to your door. And someone rang my doorbell, and I think I was in Canada. I was doing a jazz festival, and so you can talk to them like on your phone.
Oh,
and you're like, I'm like, who is this? And he's like, I'm a reporter from the New York Times.
Wow.
I'm here just trying to get information on Prince. And he like actually showed his New York Times card and put it in the mailbox. And I just said, I don't know him. You totally just wasted 15 to 20 minutes driving to my house. I don't know him at all. So, but it was really sad. I mean, he started a major, like him and Bowie and that whole androgynous kind of fashion, you know, culture was definitely during that era. I think Bowie kind of was a little step ahead with Prince when it came to that, but... you know, he definitely paved the way for a lot of people, and he was a brilliant musician, you know, so.
Yeah, and not only that, but he was revolutionary in encouraging female musicians. I started falling in love with him after he died. I liked him before, but I didn't realize how much he had brought up so many different females in the industry and how open he was to working with females, and I was like, wow.
That's really great that he did that, because it's definitely not an easy task. It is, you know, the music industry is a man's world for sure. So that's wonderful that he did that.
Have you had any exposure to Donna then, his guitarist from his girl band? A month ago, she released, she brought out her own band, and they played at the Dakota Jazz Club, coming out as, here's my new band.
I think I did see the press release, and I saw some media on it. She was young. Right? I mean, she was really, really, really...
I don't know how old she is now, but when they were in the band, she was
I don't know if she
really
was part
young
of the,
when they
what
started.
Is, it called the Power Generation? What's the
so
new...
So the one she was in was Third Eye Girl.
Okay.
That was his girl band.
Okay.
It was all females except for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just never... Like I said, I'm the worst person to ask about Prince.
And I keep asking.
I just don't have, you know... Yeah. Mike Bland, I think, was his drummer, like, in his heyday. I don't know if that's what you want to consider. What is that, the late 80s, early 90s? Is that, you know? And he plays at a place called Bunkers that's downtown. He tours with a lot of national acts. And, you know, I met him a few times. But, you know, I never really got into Prince.
Yeah.
I was into like Sisters of Mercy and like Bauhaus and Love and Rockets and Joy Division. Like I was the one wearing black lipstick that no one talked to in high school. I wasn't, you know, I wasn't really listening to a lot of pop music back then. So, but yeah.
Well, for being a Minnesota musician and not having Prince to help you along the way, you've done well.
Thank you.
I saw the piece that the Chicago Tribune did earlier this year. And do you remember that?
I have a lot of different pieces.
Yeah.
But yeah.
They did a really nice piece on you that was in, I think, May of this year. And talked about addiction.
Sure.
And talked about... your UK experience, which I want to hear about. So you were on this show.
Jules Holland's,
Yes, and that's a fairly...
It's a really popular show.
Yeah, it's very famous.
It's very, very famous. I mean, nobody knows about it here.
Like, how does a band in Minnesota get on that show in the UK?
You know, I think we started going over there, and he got a lot of requests from some of my buyers. It seems like in this business, you'll have people who really, really... really, really, really support you. And then you'll have other ones that are like, meh. And I have a couple of people in the UK that are purchasers or buyers for venues. And, you know, they reached out to his production company for years. I remember it, like, every time I talked to them, they're like, we wrote Jules Holland's producer again. We wrote, you know. And then finally, they said yes. And they picked two songs for me to do that I wrote. Because Jules is a kind of popular piano player. And he had his heyday in a band. Can't remember the name. Sorry, Jules. But in the 80s, early 90s. And, you know, he was just really kind. It was really weird. We were with Blur. Do you remember them? Do you remember? Anyway.
Yeah.
And Mark Almond. And it's like this circular room that you're in, and you just keep, people just keep playing until the show is over, you know, so you have two songs, next band, two songs, next song, you know, next band, and it's just, it was really cool. It's one of those things where your adrenaline, I don't even really remember it, because when I'm, you know, anxious or my adrenaline is running high, like 5 hours could be 2 minutes, so... but it was really fun. It was really a great experience that nobody, like, I'll say it here, like, this is the song we did on Jules Holland. Crickets, you know? But I meet someone for the UK, and they're like, you were really on Jules Holland? I'm like, yeah, it's on our website. You know, go check it out. So, but it was a good experience for me. That's definitely a bucket list for a lot of people that, you know. Was really cool.
It's incredible.
Jules, they played on MTV in Palladia here. You know, I still get people that say, I saw you doing Jules Holland. You know, there are a few people that, you know, do see it on, was it MTV2 or I don't know how many channels they have now, but in Palladia. So that's really cool. But the most exposure I get, I think, TV wise, is a thing called Bluegrass Underground, which is on PBS. And it's in this cave in the middle of Tennessee, McMinnville, Tennessee. And it's, it probably gets me the most exposure that I've ever had is on a PBS show. So, which is really cool. Really good people that run that. It's like 333 feet under the ground. Huge chandelier. It's just out. It's just, you should look it up. It's really a cool show. Not for me. I mean, you can look for other people. Like Widespread Panic has been on it, and Jason Isbell, and you know, there's a lot of cool people that they have on it. So, and that's been a real cool experience for me too. TV's weird. You know, just to, don't try to curl your hair and play in a cave. Just things like that. You know, it just,
you feel
like,
more nervous about a TV appearance versus a club show?
I think so, yeah, because, I mean, I am a performer, so it's easy for me just to do that, but I think, like, if I make a mistake and, you know, it's so there forever. Like, that mistake will be heard a lot, you know? So, sorry about that, people. I'm super rude and leaving my phone on. But it was a really cool experience for sure. It's probably my mom too.
Mom's calling.
My mom, yeah. So
that's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I've also read some things about just the whole body positivity, you know, opinion you have and everything, and I think that's really important as someone who's worked in the music industry for a while now and had experience with just what that industry is like for women and a lot of things that
absolutely.
I experience. I've seen other artists experience.
I think just women in general, regardless if they're in the entertainment business or not, you know, there's just somehow when we decided to become a patriarchal situation in the world, you know, people started wanting a stereotypical, what they think is beautiful, you know, so it's been printed and photographed and videoed and, you know, and I'm okay with being curvy. I think it's great. I look like a Baroque piece of art. I think it's wonderful.
You're gorgeous.
You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it,
no,
you know.
There's
I don't know. It just, it's... you know, I've had people call me fat. I've had people, you know, tell me I'd probably succeed more if I lost some weight. I've definitely had those things said to me. And then I just, you know, order a Domino's pizza at 2 a.m, you know, whatever.
Yeah, good for
you. You know, that's what the only thing that's going to cause me to not become successful, you know, then it wasn't the path I should be on, you know, and that's the way I look at it. And it's unbelievably unrealistic to look the way society has pegged the perfect people to look. It's impossible. So I'm not going to go for it, you know. I'm just going to do me, you know?
Yeah. Good for you, because there's a ton of pressure and it's very easy to get sucked into that.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying I haven't, you know, I'm not saying that I, you know, I haven't been sad about people saying those things, you know, it hurts, you know, but, like I said, that's their problem. It's not mine. And I just have to keep thinking it in that way, you know. So
yeah, and I think overall you have a great just very strong womanly presence anyways. I saw something else about one of your songs was influenced by this book,
Women Run with Wolves.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited to read that book after I looked it up on Amazon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've got to read this book because it just feels like it would feed me.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much you can look up with the history of women and you know, where would we be without us, you know? I don't want to play that card. I never try to play that card, you know? I don't know what being a feminist is. I know that I own my own business and I pay my bills. I'm strong in my mind. I'm strong in my heart. I lean into everything I do. And I am a woman, you know, and that's, I think, the best way you can, you know, expose yourself to other women, you know.
Yeah.
So
we need that for the girls that we're bringing up.
Absolutely.
As we try to change.
Absolutely.
The dialogue around what it is to be a woman and our place in whatever industry.
I mean, if you look at the history of, how many years has it been that we've been able to vote? Like, I mean, it's been not very many people, yeah. You know, there's still people, you know, want to fight about the pay grade, but even though that there's laws against it, it's still there, you know, and it's just, you know, it's always going to be an uphill battle and, you know, doing any small part you possibly can is the best thing that you can do, you know, for me at least, is to just be myself and try to be impeccable with my words and, you know, that's all I can do, you know, so.
I love it. Yeah, I just realized or heard this that I had no clue. I thought that we'd been doing this a lot longer, but apparently we've only been in the workforce for 40 years. And I was like, wow, I'm 41.
I mean, World War II, I mean, just so much back in the history of, and it's all based upon war, of course, but, you know, we had to fight to be able to, you know, and women still deal and struggle with, I'm 39 and I don't have any children. I'm not going to have children. You know, and there's still people that are like, you're not going to have children? You know, it's still odd to me that they expect me. I just got married in April, you know, and this is what I'm supposed to do, you know. So, you know, I think there's still this guilt of women in the workforce that have children and, you know, I don't have answers for them because I don't personally have children, but I couldn't imagine, you know, not being an independent woman. If I did have a child, I would still want to work, you know? And that's just my thing. If there's women that want to be stay-at-home mothers, that's another job in itself as well, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the point that you have a choice and that you're capable of making that choice, you know? And you shouldn't be guilted or, you know, be told what you should do as a woman. I think that's just kind of ridiculous. And good luck trying to tell me what to do, and call me. If someone tells you what to do, give them my number. I'll let them know what's up. You know, they just can't, they can't do that, you know. So it's really something else. So I picked a career that, you know, I can't even imagine in vaudeville and being a woman in the music industry or the, you know, entertainment industry back in the day either. Like, I just couldn't, it probably was so much harder. I'm complaining about it now, you know. I can't imagine what they had to put up with, you know. So
I think another way that you are inspiring, and as more people hear your story can be more inspiring, is the fact that you didn't, you're not that person that people can look at and say, oh, well, she just had a lucky break. You've had a lot of strife.
I still am paying my dues. I mean, that's, I never cut corners ever. You know, just like I said before, I lean into everything. I lean into the success I make. I lean into success I don't make. I lean into being happy. I lean into being sad. You know, and I just think, you know, I leaned into my mistakes. Like, you know, I'm my biggest critic. But, yeah, nothing's ever been handed to me. I've had people that have helped me and supported me, you know. Like I said, with people who had faith in my music, you know. But there's definitely been a lot of heartbreak in the small amount of time I've been doing this. Which is, when I say that, that's over a decade. I mean, there's Mavis Staples. I mean, look at her. I don't even know how old she is. She's had to been doing this for, I mean, over 30, 40 years, you know? So I'm just, sometimes I think I'm crazy, but I just keep at it. I give myself a year every year. I'm like, one more year. And if this doesn't happen, I'm out, you know? And then something, you know, a blessing will happen, and then I'll say, okay, just one more year. I'm just going to give it one more year, and then I'm out, you know? So, but I persevere. There's fire within me that comes from somewhere, you know? So.
And we touched on it a little bit, but you were a heroin addict.
Oh, for years. Yeah. I mean, over 10 years. You know, I definitely was, it was bad. I mean, when I tell people now, I don't think that they can understand, A, because they weren't with me, for one, when it was going on, but because I come from, like, a really economically depressed area in Pennsylvania that just, it's an epidemic, you know. It's an epidemic in a lot of places, you know, yeah. I mean, I lived it. I definitely leaned into that as well. And I'm a statistic that is, I think, a miracle personally. If, you know, you would have known me then, you know, you wouldn't have talked to me, you know. It was a really hard time. And it's just even weird to think about, to even look back on. But, you know.
How long have you been sober?
I've been sober for 15 years. So, you know, I was homeless. Definitely some dodgy occupations here and there. You know, if it wasn't hammered down, I would have taken it. You know, I ate out of garbage cans and then, you know, I definitely was, you know, lived on the streets, and day to day, my only goal was to feel better. And that, you know, when you're in addiction, that's what your goal is just to feel better, because you get to a point where it's pretty quickly where it's not fun anymore. It's just a necessity, you know. So, and I'm just really lucky. It's so weird just to think, you know, of who I was back then, you know, and the scariness of it is definitely a percentage of the reason that I'm not there, you know, because it's a really frightening thing to be in, you know. So, but I'm very blessed.
How did you pull yourself out of that?
You know, I did it on the streets. I was so bad that I went into seizures when I tried to kick. I did it myself. I'd been in rehab, I don't know how many times, and that, you know, that didn't really help me. And I still believe that, like, I still believe that addiction is a symptom of an illness, you know, and I'm still working on myself all the time. But it was on the streets. You know, I tried to set it up where I hustled someone into a plane ticket to fly me back to Key West, where I knew that things weren't readily available. It was like on an island. And I mean, immediately I went into seizures and had to be in the hospital. And, you know, it took a little bit of really hard times, you know. And that's when I started busking in Key West on the streets with a guitar. And so music in a lot of ways saved me. But it's, you know, I worked the tables. I've been in and out of AA and NA meetings, and, you know, definitely got what I could possibly get and the tools that they give you there. But, you know, I just constantly am working on myself. You know, I definitely suffer from, you know, depression and anxiety, and, you know, I have to really remember when my depression is telling me, like, I suck, that it's lying to me, you know, and sometimes it's hard. I have to call people. I have to not get out of bed for a couple of days, and I just have to ride the wave is what I call it. I just call it ride the wave just until, you know, I feel better, a little bit better. You know, I get anxiety really bad. Still, I'm really good on stage, but I don't like being in big crowds. And, you know, even though I love playing to big crowds, I find it very, very, very difficult. And I think, you know, I don't want to call myself empathic, but I think it's just I absorb way too much that's around me. And so I have to, you know, definitely set myself up for success with that, you know, and take time from being around a lot of people. Walking through a crowd, by the time I'm done, I could definitely be in tears. Like, I don't know what it is. Because, you know, like I said, I can sing to thousands and thousands of people. I can sing to it. And being on stage, there's just some sort of like weird line, like this membrane that's just kind of between me and them. And I think I'm at a higher level. It's nothing like that. It's just there's something. But as soon as you, like if I do the state fair or something like that, like I'm screwed. I got to stay in the green room for sure. Yeah, people forget that I'm a human being. Sometimes people in my band forget I'm a human being. And that's hard.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's why I was, like, when she said that about the backstage, like, that's what I do, is I tour around and stuff. And
yeah.
It's overwhelming, especially when I'm in Canada.
I've had people lick me. Yeah, I've had people, like, they just, yeah, just really, they forget their boundaries. And then, you know, they're drinking on top of it, and so that makes it even sometimes worse. But, you know, I didn't really start developing it as bad as until I started getting more growing pains with the band. You know, now I still sell my own merch, and I still, you know, sign and meet everybody, and I still do that. But by the time I'm done, I'm like, I'm done. Like, I could probably, you know, stay in my house for a month. I get my groceries delivered to me. Like, on my downtime, I'm a hermit. Like, I don't hang at all with people. So, and that's an example of one of the things I need to work on, you know, finding a happy medium, because, you know, the pendulum is just one way or the other way with me. I'm all or nothing, and so, you know, it's weird, but.
So if you're touring, you have shows, does that ever affect you? Is there ever a point where you say, I don't want to do the show tonight, I'm too anxious, depressed, whatever it is?
Definitely. People forget that it's a job, you know. I'm on the road probably 7 months out of the year. You know, I'm people forget that, you know, they're like, are you living your dream? And it's true, I am. But there's definitely a lot of things that aren't dreamy in my dream. And so some people kind of forget about that. I get a lot of like, oh, I used to play guitar before I got a real job. Like, I've literally had that said to me, and I'm thinking, you know, like I said, when we were coming over here, I'm my admin. I do all my graphics. I crash coursed on HTML and JavaScript when dial-up was a thing. You know what I mean? I've done everything I possibly could. I do all the artwork for my CDs and write all the songs, arrange all the songs. You know, I do the everything, you know? And so there's definitely days I don't want to expend my energy. But by the third song in, I'm cool. You know, it's you know, there's a switch, you know, because I don't ever want to mail it in, you know. And I think Louis Armstrong said, like, it's time to quit your job when like you, there's no more music in you, you know. So I'm gonna take that to heart, you know, hopefully that time won't come anytime soon. But you know, there's definitely days, yeah, I don't want to smile to people, you know, but you know, the music is healing, so it really helps, you know.
And this is a story that I hear all the time from musicians. It's a story that I deal with myself as well. I think that it's the artistic mind, and it's what makes you artistic, is that absorbing everything. And it's just like a different way that we work, and it does cause
a push and pull,
anxiety and depression and things.
Sure.
It's just like this natural thing, and it creates these beautiful things on one hand, but then can be, you know, debilitating.
Absolutely.
Sometimes.
Yeah, you know, and you have to be both sides of your brain, at least in this business. If you're running, if you're a band leader, you know, you can't just, you know, be creative. There's other things that you have to do, you know, that sometimes take up that creative. The creative side is sacrificed at times, you know, which will put you in this weird imbalance of life, you know. I'm actually kind of there, like where I have to come out with a new album. Every time I talk to my agent or my manager, they bring it up, you know. But meanwhile, you know, I have 5 mouths to feed. You know, I need to be on the road. You know, I have my guys on a... it's not a salary. I don't want to say that for the government reasons, but they're on a stipend. So when, you know, every week I give them the same amount of money, whether we work or not, you know. And so, and there's, you know, I lost my voice for 2 weeks, and I had to, that's a lot of overhead that I had to, you know, give out, but that's part of it, you know. But, yeah, it's just like a different, you just have to be both sides of your brain and try to balance life. But I think everybody adulting is trying to do that, you know, no matter what. There's always a imbalance: kids, work, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, work, you know, housework versus yard work. I mean, there's always like a weird, you know, imbalance that people, I feel, are, everybody around us is striving for. I have to remember that too, you know. Those shadows around me, those are people, and they you know, they're going through, if not, you know, heavier, way heavier stuff than I am. I mean, look what's happened in the world right now. Things are crazy, you know. Me getting depressed is like, it's, you know, so such small beans and the, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know. And remembering that, you know, is, it helps to put my energy toward trying to heal them, you know, instead of being so me. So
I have to hear the story behind River.
Well, I wrote it just kind of as a gospel tune, kind of a very like, I'm gonna, you know, in my easy chair, kind of float on and pass away. And one of my fans called, or no, I'm sorry, wrote me and said, I'm dying, and I'd like to hear this can you come to the Mayo Clinic, which is in Rochester, Minnesota, which I think is like 20 minutes, 30 minutes away from my house. And can you come and play that? Because he was getting chemo there. And so I did. And he survived for, I think, a good year. And then he passed away. And since he's passed away, the only time I've ever played that song is when his wife has come to see us. So it really...
Yeah.
I mean, that's just so heavy.
It's a deep...
Yeah, I mean, that was his song, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't write it for him, but it ended up being that I did, you know? And so...
It was there in you for a reason.
Yeah. You know, and it's so sad that he passed away. And when his wife comes and sees us, and, you know, sometimes I'm like, should I sing it? You know, I kind of talk to her daughter and say, is it okay? And should I? And, you know, and I think it's a healing process for her, and, you know, that it's a way for him to be there with her. But that's really the only time I sing it. And it's so heavy. Like, I hate to, but yeah. I drove by myself to the Mayo Clinic, and they have like a foyer there with this old guy that plays standards for the patients. Again, and that's where I ended up singing for him. I got the stink eye from the dude that was playing. Like, he just didn't want to give up the piano. It was kind of cute. And then I, you know, got to play it for him. And I got to play it for him outside of the Mayo Clinic, you know, for a year or so. He would come and see me. So, yeah, really good guy. Really great family.
So, yeah. That's incredible, and it makes so much sense. Every song, I think, has something that influences it, but there are definitely songs that there was something so deep in them. And when someone else hears it, they may not understand what that is, but they can feel it in that song. And I think that's what's there with that song.
I think it's funny when I... Because I don't know if I'm good at what I do. I really don't. I don't know. I have no idea. Like, I don't listen to myself other than when I record and have to mix and stuff my CD. But other than that, I hate listening to myself. And, you know, sometimes I hate writing because it's a difficult task because you want it to be really honest, you know. But there's some songs where I've written and I'm like, where did that come from? You know, when I look back at it, you know. And that's definitely one of them for sure. So... It's hard to write about yourself. So a lot of times I just pretend I'm someone else. And, you know, and it's a little easier for me. So.
Yeah. Well, I think you're amazing. I'm so glad that I got to meet you.
Thank you.
And talk to you and hear this.
I'm so awkward. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think it's so inspiring for another female musician or any female really in any industry who's trying to kind of just break the mold, even to have women like you out there doing these things and being strong. And I mean, is even though you've been through so much and you probably didn't think of yourself as a role model at one time, you're an amazing role model now.
Yeah. And I mean, I still, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, I think everybody has their own path, and this is the path that I was on and the path that I'm on now are paths, the path that I was supposed to be on, even the horse caca.
You can say whatever. It's a podcast.
You know, even all of the BS and, you know, the self-destruction, you know, I'm sure I could have found easier ways to deal and cope with my upbringing, but... It happened. I'm not ashamed of it. My heart is still on my sleeve and always will be. And, you know, it's just, I hope I can help people know that no matter what they want to do, that they have the potential of it. Because, you know, I never thought that I would be doing what I'm doing. You know, and I'm still playing to chairs in some cities, you know, and it's you know, but it's humility is a huge thing as well. You know, in life. So, and I've definitely had a few cups of humility, but thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
didn't mean to do you wrong. I will take myself to the river, take myself to the river to pray. And if that don't work, I will sail along. I didn't mean to hurt you, I'm just made that way. I was born with a sad, sad soul. Please forgive me, I've been crying all day. Without you, my heart ain't whole.
You just listened to a conversation with Davina of Davina and the Vagabonds. Now you're listening to their song River, and you just listened to the story behind this soulful song. Davina's one inspiring woman. I was on such a natural high after talking with her. She performed a beautiful cover of I Won't Back Down after the death of Tom Petty. You can check that out on her Instagram, at Davina Vagabonds. If you like what you just heard, please rate and review Rock Talk with Summer on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. Find and follow me on Facebook and Instagram, at Rock Talk Podcast.
Put a smile on his face again. And if that don't work, I swear, I will stay alone. Don't worry.